This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably. I would be interested to know, you mentioned having a daily writing discipline. You write before work, and then also maybe translate that also into how you prepared for the Colbert set as well. So maybe starting off with how you created your routine, what is your routine, what is your writing, and then how it parlays into Colbert.
Sure. I think the writing, I just made it automatic. Like, just wake up, take a shower, make a cup of coffee, piece of toast, open the notebook, don't think, and just start, right? Okay. I never have anything prepared. And I think it's hard for me to get motivated to write. And then if I don't write, then it's hard for me to go on stage because I don't have anything new. The moment you have something new to try, you can't wait to go on stage.
Mm-hmm. Hot Breath. What's up, Hot Breathiverse? Welcome back. I hope you are doing well in these crazy times we're in. But you know what time it is. Hot Breath. That's right, hot brethren and sistren. This is the Hot Breath Podcast, the show where you learn comedy from the pros. I am comedian Joel Byers, based in Atlanta, Georgia, here to learn comedy with you. And especially now more than ever in the time we're in, you can see from last week, we did a live Q&A with a social media marketer, Zach Lyman, to help you out on social media. Today, we are posting a live Q&A we did with one of you, a fellow Hot Brethren. Last week's guest was also a fan of the show. And this week's guest, not only is a fan of the show, but he also recently performed on Stephen Colbert. I love hearing from all of you on social media. I love connecting with you. And when Pedro reached out to me, I was like, oh, I just saw him on Colbert. This is crazy. So then he is actually willing to hop into the private Facebook group, which if you're not a member of, go into the show notes. Join that private Facebook group. We have over 300 members from around the world now connecting and sharing their own comedy insights and tips. And Pedro actually reached out on social media and said he was such a big fan. And I was like, I'm a fan. We should do a Q&A to share with the Hot Breathiverse how you got on Colbert and how you prepared for it. So this is the inside baseball of one, how to get booked on a late night show, but then also how to prepare for a late night show. But then on top of that, I'm here to say it, after over 200 episodes, this may be our most in-depth and attainable, actionable, all the otherable words, like step-by-step how to create that daily writing habit. So that's what I've been doing on Facebook every morning at 10 a.m. I've been doing the Write 10 Club, where we just show up on Facebook for 10 minutes, we write, and then move on with our day. Pedro goes super in-depth into how he's able to write for several hours each and every day, and he makes it very, what would the word be? Unintimidating. Writing can be intimidating sometimes, and we can pressure ourselves into creating magic every time, but Pedro really breaks down and really helped me, and I hope he helps you, and if you found it helpful, reach out to him, let him know how helpful it was. And join this Facebook group. I'm telling you, we also this week did a live Q&A with Sean Patton that ended up being 2 hours. Okay? That's over on the Patreon right now if you want to go check that out. That's linked in the show notes, as well as I'm posting the Write 10 Clubs on the Patreon as well, just to give you guys additional content and a really one-stop shop to see it all. So go check it out. And let's get into this episode. Take notes, hot brethren and sistren, and take care out there, as there is only one thing left to do, and that is inhale a hot breath.
Let's jump into it
with
here.
Pedro Gonzalez. All right, Hot Breathiverse, welcome back to the Hot Breath Podcast. This is the show where you learn comedy from the pros. I am your host, comedian Joel Byers. And you know what time it is. Hot Breath. Oh, thank you all that did that with me, because we are live right now. This is the first episode of its kind, the first of many, and this was actually requested by you, the listeners. If you didn't know, I've been doing a live Write 10 Club every morning at 10 a.m. on my Facebook page, interacting with you, answer questions, and we do writing together. And this type of show actually came up in the discussion where people would want to do live Q&As with comedians that have performed on TV. And I was like, oh, I know just the guy. He is actually a big fan of Hot Breath. We connected on social media where he was so complimentary of the show. And I was like, it's amazing just the what this show has turned into. So today we're doing a live Q&A in the Hot Breath Comedy Network. Well, there's my honky bonics coming out. I tell you what, there's that Hot Breath Network. We're doing a live Q&A in the private Facebook group. So if you're not a member, go to Hot Breath Comedy Network in Facebook and join listeners from around the world, including today's guest, Hot Brethren and Sisterin. This guy, New York-based comic, just recently performed on Colbert, and he is here to share and answer all of your questions. Please welcome to the show the one and only Pedro Gonzalez, everyone. Welcome, Pedro, to the show.
Thank you for having me. What's up, everybody?
Yeah. Everyone say hey to Pedro. We have sound effects.
Nice.
Isn't that exciting? All right. So everyone, please let me know in the comments as well how the audio is doing, because posted a Skype session last week and the audio was a little uneven. So I'm hoping we even it out a little bit this time. But this is great. We have Carly here. We have Ron here in the comments. Thina, EJ as well. Yeah, Trent. Yeah, Pedro. So... Carly said, hola. I think she meant hola. No siento, Pedro. No entiendo lo gringa ahí.
No problema.
So please, just to start off here for a second, Pedro, please introduce yourself to the Hot Breath Diverse. Let them know a little bit about you and your comedy background.
Sure. So I'm originally from Colombia, and I came to the United States about 16 years ago. And about 6.5 years ago, I was living in Philly, and I was watching this webcam series about comedy called Modern Comedian, I think.
Yeah, it's a great show.
Yeah, and they had an episode on open mics, and then they profiled Subha Agarwal, who was doing like 20 mics a week. And I was like in my first month of comedy, and I realized, well, I mean, I'm like 2 hours away from New York. And if I can do so, if I can get on stage so much, why not just go to New York? And I came, and I started doing mics like a maniac, and never stopped until the coronavirus started.
And but like a maniac, how many shows are we talking about a night a week?
I don't know that shows, like for the first 2 years, there was no shows. I have, I don't know if you can see, I have a calendar right behind me. Do you see it?
Yeah, very cool.
It's empty right now for March because I didn't fill it up. But do you remember the Seinfeld technique of like every day that he wrote, he would have a calendar, and every day he wrote, he would put an X on the day. So at the end of the month, he would have a visual for how many days a month he wrote.
Yeah, he called it breaking the chain. Right.
Correct. Yes, yeah. I use the same technique, but just for performing.
Oh,
so if every day that I did two mics or three mics, I would write two. Then at the end of the week, I would add it up, and then at the end of the month, I would know that I would do that. I had done, let's say, 45 mics a month or 60 mics a month. Mm-hmm. And for my first 2 years, I basically didn't have any shows.
Huh.
Which is mics.
Definitely not even everything booked, but like open mics, you're saying you're doing like 45 to 60 a month is what you were saying?
If not 70, yeah, if in my first 70. And second year.
Jeez Louise. And do you have a day job during this time, or what's that hustle?
Yeah, I've always had a day job.
Uh-huh.
So it was kind of like if your day job, I would have a day job that started like at 8:30. So then I would wake up at, I would like write every morning from seven to eight, just like a little hour at least. And then after work, I would go and do a mic at 5, at 6, and at 7, and then be done by 8 or be done by 9.
And what is the day job? Do you still have your day job, by the way?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So what are you, can you say what your day job is?
Sure. I'm an interpreter at a legal aid firm.
Oh, okay. Very cool.
Yeah.
So you never know when you see people on TV, you never know what, and he's drinking out of his Colbert mug, by the way, he pointed that out on Skype earlier. Yes. So I am I'm drinking out of the hot breath water as well. So we're all being on brand here. So people feel free. Trent liked the don't break the chain idea, and Athena liked the idea as well. So that's great. And kids, feel free, jump in the comments with any questions. But I would like to get into a little bit more of Pedro, and it sounds like, and what's funny is the guy that produced that show, Modern Comedian, Scott Moran, I actually did a show with him in Atlanta several years ago, and he was showing me the early, he hadn't even started posting them yet, because he's done some with Roy Scovel, who he's now directed some of Roy Scovel's comedy specials, and he directed Todd Glass's comedy special as well, so he's actually a director in comedy now. But he was showing me the early behind the scenes of him cutting together that show in the green room. And it's cool to just see the views it's gotten and the impact, because I saw that Suba episode and it really inspired me to really get on my hustle. So I recommend any comics listening to this, go check out that series. There's a really good one about Mitch Hedberg as well that really shows him and his creative process like never before.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of, I'm interested in the late night part. Now, people, you can ask questions, anything about his writing or anything, because it sounds like he has a good writing system. But first off, how did you even book Colbert?
I got recommended by two people who did it.
Mm-hmm.
They did it without me asking.
Interesting.
The booker for Colbert, she's super busy. She's always in LA or in New York. It's really hard to catch her because she's got a lot of things going on.
Right.
She asked for my schedule. I'm talking about a year ago. It was the first time that she said, "Tell me your show schedule." I was doing this festival in Boston called Women in Comedy Festival. I was doing a guest set there, and she was she was supposed to come to that show, but then she couldn't make it. And then I did another festival called the West Side Comedy Showdown in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And she was supposed to be a judge of the contest. And I was opening the show, and before I did my set, she got a phone call and she left. So the whole thing about her seeing me live was not as easy. It wasn't easy, even though I had already been recommended and she wanted and she had expressed interest, but she just had so many other commitments that we just didn't get to the same place that the happy coincidence never happened. And the second time she sent me an email, she said, "Send me your latest 5.
Oh, okay.
But my intuition is that I think I was busy with something else, but at the moment I didn't think. I thought maybe I'm gonna close this deal when she sees me live. So I sort of didn't really pay attention to this request. And then I emailed back and I was like, "Can I send it in a couple weeks? Because I just don't have that many great shows coming up." And she was like, "I need it by Friday, because I have a stand-up meeting." And so then I just asked for a bunch of spots, which I usually don't do. I got the tape, send the tape, forgot about it. 2 weeks later, I got an email saying, "Green light, you're doing it."
What?
Yeah.
So what? I wonder. And I think there's a little bit of a clicking or something. Are you tapping the table or anything?
No? I might be, but I will stop.
No, I don't know. I just someone's gonna say, if no one else is complaining, then don't worry about it. But I just kept hearing kind of something as you were talking. But
okay, is it gone now?
So far, I think.
Okay.
I've just been doing this podcast long enough to know anyone will find a reason to to like complain about the audio or something if they get a chance.
I get it. I get it.
Can you make your guest talk closer to the mic? And I was like, hey, I'm doing everything I can here. All right. I'm sorry, guys. But yeah, I just wanted to. So let's get focused here. So I wonder what was. So it's kind of like you went. It took about a year, it says. A year ago, she's like, show me her schedule. And then it's like, oh, she'll get to see me live. And then, no, she didn't. And then send me the new clip. And then how long between her saying yes to then you being on the show? Like, what was that turnaround?
I think it was about 6 weeks.
Six-week turnaround. Okay, cool.
6 weeks turnaround, yeah.
Wow, yeah. So an entire process, even being recommended by two other comics.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of recommendations, I like this one. Z says, Pedro, are you going to refer Joel Byers? Just an idea. Just an idea. Just an idea, you know.
I think I can't see the comments, so I can't tell that the guy is real. So maybe... But I think bringing up the whole thing is the recommendation thing. It's a good thing to keep in mind. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what other people's focuses on that are, but it's like when I think that when it comes to comedy, when somebody wants to recommend you for something, they can't wait to do it.
Mm.
So it's like it's like. If you're a very attractive person, somebody's going to ask you to prom.
Gotcha.
And you go like, you know what? If I'm proactive and I ask all these people to prom, then it's going to happen. But it's – I don't know. I don't want to make it about looks. But do you know what I'm trying to say?
So I'm not pretty enough for TV. Is that what
– No, you're very handsome. If there was a prom, I would be honored to be more with me.
Yeah, but that is a good point.
At least that's my philosophy. When I rarely ask to get booked.
Right.
I work hard enough, and I never think about getting getting booked or getting recommended for this or that. And I just let my work speak for itself.
Yes, I love that, and I think that's such an important point that it took me years into comedy to realize of just focus on what you can control. Don't have expectations of other people. Really just focus on just getting as funny as possible. And
right.
Instead of trying to white knuckle myself and force myself in an opportunity, when I just took a step back and was just like, what am I in control of? I'm in control of getting on stage as much as possible. I'm in control of writing and then letting all the opportunities come from that. And it's actually become my greatest success has come from just focusing on me and getting as good at comedy as possible, and everything kind of bloomed from that. And it seems like with you, you didn't ask for these recommendations. You just got recommended by two previous performers, and then boom.
Yeah.
Let work speak for itself. I love it. And you were on there with Larry David, by the way. Did you get to meet him or anything?
Oh my God, I wish. Well, wow. here's a little nugget about Colbert. Colbert is they tape the stand-up showcase separately.
Oh.
And then they chop it up and then they plug it whenever. So my Steven wasn't there when I taped.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Which probably makes it a little less nerve-wracking, you know?
Yeah.
Because I was a little nervous, but I wasn't super nervous.
Gotcha. And
I can, like when people talk about their Letterman, there's such like I was about to die that day, and it was like, but then so then I was thinking, why wasn't I like that? And I was like, oh, of course, because I wasn't performing. I'm never nervous about the audience. I'm nervous about the comedians in the back, right, being like, this guy back.
Well, luckily you're funny. And
thank you.
How long have you been doing comedy, by the way?
About 6.5 years.
6.5 years. That's great. Awesome. Yeah, I actually went through a phase where I was like, oh, let me I want to get on Conan. And then I was like, well, I want to get on Colbert. And then I was like, no, I just want to be really funny. Like, I was kind of, yeah. I had all these vanity goals that I wasn't in control of. So it's, I think it's reassuring for comedians to see someone at your experience level, but also your mindset so young into comedy of, I just let the work speak for itself. I think that's, I mean, that speaks volumes that I think comedians can already just take that nugget. Let your work speak for itself. So, that being said, and thinking of the work, Carly said, I want to know more about the writing routine. So, I think just to kind of piggyback that, I would be interested to know, you mentioned having a daily writing discipline. You write before work, and then also maybe translate that also into how you prepared for the Colbert set as well. So maybe starting off with how you created your routine, what is your routine, what is your writing, and then how it parlays into Colbert.
Sure. I think the writing, I just made it automatic. Like, just wake up, take a shower, make a cup of coffee, piece of toast, open the notebook, don't think, and just start, right? Okay. I never have anything prepared. And I think when I was doing, I still do mics sometimes, but when I was doing mics like in my second year, I had a friend who was like, well, just it's hard for me to get motivated to write, and then if I don't write, then it's hard for me to go on stage because I don't have anything new.
Right.
And then my point was like, yeah, so you know what your problem is. The moment you have something new to try, you can't wait to go on stage.
Mm-hmm.
So it's either a vicious cycle or a virtuous cycle. So I guess the reason I've been so hungry to perform so much is because I write every day for about 60 to 80 minutes.
Wow.
In the morning before I go to my day job.
That's 60 to 80 minutes. And that's how I am too, though. If I don't write, I don't feel inspired to perform because there's nothing new to try, or, you know.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you've created a routine around it. So it is like you had to make it something you didn't think about, where it is like, okay, I write up, I shower, coffee, writing. That's almost like the regimen every day you just had to instill.
Yeah, of course, because if you think about it, when you're writing stand-up, you're digging into your childhood, your insecurities.
Mm-hmm.
And then a joke is like this perfect little line that almost doesn't make sense semantic. It's like it's something off the wall, something that surprises people and makes them laugh. It's something that you would never expect it.
Mm-hmm.
And for you to be able to come up with that, you, at least in my case, I just need a lot of like, I don't want to say free writing, but just a lot of putting things down some paper and reworking them.
Mm-hmm.
Until I find the right way of expressing something, the best way of expressing something.
Yeah, what is that? You did mention nothing is prepared either, so you kind of take the pressure off of having to create lightning in a bottle every time you sit down. I'm a big fan of, and that's why I do the Write 10 Club every morning, is because it's like, just show up and just write. Like, even just for 10 minutes, yeah. A lot of the time, 10 minutes will grow into 20, 30, 60, but it's like you just have to start and take away all the pressure and expectation. So with you, is it free writing? Is it you're just kind of journaling about the day, or do you have prompts? Or
I have a little notebook that I wanted to show you with,
yeah,
like,
I love it.
So basically, I don't know if you can see this. You can see this page.
Okay. Yeah.
If I had gotten anything that I would think is worth talking about, I would have like put a little bracket, and then I would take my little notebook and I write two words that would remind me to go and try it on stage, right?
Okay.
But
yes.
Sometimes I can go, like, if you go through my notebook, there could be like, say, 7 days where there's nothing.
Right.
Where I came up with nothing.
Right.
But you know what? I just feel, at the end of the day, I just feel great. I'm like, oh, I woke up and I wrote and nothing came out. But I'm exercising my brain. Like, I am fine-tuning my writing comedic voice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fine. So I think the moment that I taught myself to take off the pressure, that's when I became free to, like, become funny.
Okay, yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah, take off the pressure of writing, because a lot of times we try to force it, and we right. squeeze it so tight that we end up suffocating it, as opposed to just letting it be what it is.
Right, right, right. So I have I found a day where I came up with a bit. So I, if you want me to, I'll give you like a little breakdown of how I came up with the bit.
Absolutely, please.
Okay, so on March 14th, that day I woke up, and I did have. Normally, I don't have anything that I'm going to write about. I'll just put down like, oh, I had a cup of coffee. I bought coffee, blah, blah, blah.
Great.
But this day, I decided to talk about when I didn't have health insurance and I lost a tooth, right? It's embarrassing. Like, when something is embarrassing or scary, or like it makes you uncomfortable or it's humiliating, of course, that's good for humor. So I have this little... I try something for like four or five lines.
Mm-hmm.
To a different approach and the same thing. Does that make sense?
You actually cut out right when you said that. Can you say that again?
Sure, sure, sure. If you see this little bullet point,
mm-hmm.
there's a little bullet point, and I'll do something for like four or five lines to see if I find a funny approach. And if I don't, I drop it and I start again.
Gotcha. Okay. So once you find something that strikes you, you try to explore right. that a little bit more by asking questions or.
So for example, in this one, I wrote that I would talk about the fact that I have two dental implants, and then I took the approach of like, so as a person who hasn't had the dental care, I believe that everyone should have free dental care, right? And then I tried a little bullshit joke about healthcare.
Mm.
Nothing panned out.
Gotcha.
And then, okay, what's dating like without a tooth? So then, I try to make an analogy. Oh, going on a date with a missing tooth is like auditioning for Juilliard without a keyboard on your piano, right? Still not funny.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, okay, the dating part didn't work. Then I was like, okay, what else can I compare with? I wrote the next one is a missing arm is a sign of an accident. A missing tooth is a sign of your parents had you as an accident or something. Yeah. Yeah, like when I read it today, I was like, this isn't even bad. So like right now, I'm going to put a little bracket and maybe I'll tweet it or I'll try it on stage. But that wasn't the bit. So then I kept going and I said, and this isn't even funny, but it's like the reason people don't judge you when you lose an arm is because it was unfortunate that something bad happened to you. Well, as when you lost your tooth, it's like that was your choice to not brush your fucking teeth.
Right.
So then that's your fault, right? Again, didn't come to any jokes. Then I said, it's embarrassing to go and then I just started brainstorming like, what would be a job interview on the phone if you don't have teeth and you sound like that?
Mm.
Maybe they give you a job because they think you're mentally what's the term? Disabled. Mm-hmm. You have a mental disability. Right. So then that led me to go, oh, what if I actually went on a real interview for it to be? And then what's the worst place to get rejected from? Walmart, right? Walmart will hire anybody. So then I came up with the idea that I was interviewing to be a greeter at Walmart. And then the guy was like, good interview, but I can't have you smiling. I can't have you greeting customers with that. That doesn't look nice because you're missing teeth. You're missing a tooth. And then I go like my comeback would be like, but that guy, like I look at the greeter and I go like, that guy is missing a chromosome. And then the guy comes back and he's like, well, but he looks adorable when he smiles.
Mm-hmm.
That's a joke that's in progress. But I came to it going like all the way and exploring all those different things. So I don't know if that helps to like
elucidate. Oh my gosh. Yeah, that totally helps. And it seems like you find something that strikes you as interesting or funny, and you put it in brackets, and then you may explore it with different questions and different situations that idea may create humor out of.
Right.
Yeah. And this actually, this kind of piggybacks into the next question, but Z asks, when you write so much, how do you decide what to keep/try?
I guess when you hit something that is like that feels like a joke, I think that's when you have to like trust your intuition.
Oh, yes. Feels like a joke, yeah.
Most of it is just garbage.
Right. Which I think is important for comedians to hear is that, I mean, at any level, you know, I've interviewed comedians 20 years into this, and they'll say one out of every 20 things they end up keeping. So it's good for younger comics to hear that most of what you write is just nonsense, or it is garbage, and it's not going to work.
Yeah. I think a good lesson for me was I went to a UCB show and I saw Louis C.K. once, and he was doing this bit about the idea of pavements. Mm-hmm. What if somebody's laying pavement and then the construction guys watch, falls, and then he puts it on the pavement, and then when he wants to retrieve the thing, he has to break up. And then he just looks at his book and he's like, this is the stupidest thing I've ever written. How did I ever think this was funny? And then I was like, oh, well, if somebody who's been doing it for 25 years or 30 years can fail, allow himself to fail, why shouldn't I fail?
Exactly.
That's. I think sometimes we look at them and we're like, they're geniuses. But they're not necessarily geniuses, but they're people who like really work hard at their craft.
Yeah. And that's a very big benefit to doing comedy in New York is you do get to see all of these just titans of comedy failing on stage.
Oh yeah.
Are there any other memories of seeing someone like at a Louis C.K. level, getting to see them live working out stuff?
I mean, I've seen Mark Norman, which mm-hmm. I one of the comedians that I like really respect the most, and I've just I saw him once. I think it was like a Monday, and I saw him at UCB at 11:20, mm-hmm. like after 11 p.m. But he was doing a 20-minute set or something, 15-minute set. And I remember seeing him at 5 p.m. at an open mic at a stand-up in New York with three people. And I remember thinking, if I had a 20-minute set at midnight, that's good enough for me to work anything out. However, this guy who's like killing it already mm-hmm. is so committed to working that he's trying it out at an open mic at 5 p.m. And I thought he was great.
Yeah, he's one of those that really puts it in.
Right, and he had a couple bits that just didn't go anywhere, and he was like embarrassed, and I was like, oh look, it's okay to make mistakes.
It is. That's how you learn. Yeah, he our first interview we did with him, he at the time, I don't know if he still holds it, but at the time he held the record for doing the most open mics in a year in New York, because he's constantly on stage.
Right, right, right.
Oh, and good. Ramiro says the breakdown about the tooth joke was super helpful. So that's good.
Oh, great.
This actually...
It was like the joke sucks, but the breakdown was good.
It was very insightful. I haven't really heard someone kind of break down their process like that before. So that's why we're doing this.
Cool.
So keeping in joke breakdown, because I do want to think about the Colbert thing as well and kind of tie it in. Trevor Glassman here, he asked, how long did it take for you to shape and perfect that set you did on Colbert? And also, and how did you go about choosing what jokes to do /shape?
I think it shaped itself organically.
Okay.
I remember the first time that I did they're very, New York has less industry than you think.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just focusing on my writing my jokes, but and there's few occasions when you go on, you showcase for industry, like Laughing Skull, like the festival in Atlanta, right? So I did that like 3 years ago, or 4 years ago. So I was like 2.5 years into comedy. So there I am with my 5 minutes, and I have 2.5 that are clean, and are about me, about my family, about where I'm from, and they're funny and they're clean. And then I have my like, oh, I'm 3 years into comedy and I have this cancer bit. Let me just throw it in about how my. And then it's just like, yeah, no, that's not what they want for TV.
Mm-hmm.
But so I kept writing, and I think it organically came to be something about like, oh, this is something about I was made fun of my looks for this. This is something that I observed that is different from my culture to American culture. This is something that happened to me in dating. This is a racist thing that a guy told me at an airport. And this is my experience dating. I'm not giving you a formula, but I'm saying like six things that were like, they were all about me.
Boom.
And they were clean. I think sometimes people go like, oh, I don't want to do that. I don't want to play to them or whatever. But it's like at a certain point, you should know who you're trying to perform for. And then again, as I told you, I wasn't writing for them. I don't think a late night TV is the ultimate goal. I was just writing what I thought was funny. And it happened to be very personal.
Yeah, it was very personal.
Right. And as far as like selecting, so I've never asked for spots, but once I was told you're doing Colbert, then I just hit up everybody because like that email is a little easier to get responded to when it's like, oh, preparing for Colbert. People are like, yeah, come do my show. And one thing that I did is every show that I did, I would have the host always ask you, what do you want as an introduction? And I was like, please say that I'm doing this set on Colbert, because that makes the audience go like, oh, let me see if this is funny.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes me nervous. So the day when I'm taping Colbert, I've been as nervous as I'm ever going to be. Does that make sense?
So you set the expectation that, oh, this is going to be something special, so you almost have to rise to the occasion.
For the audience.
Yeah, for the audience. If they're right. They're expecting big things, so you got better bring it type deal.
Right. But for me, I kept, and then again, everyone's process is different. I kept writing new jokes. Because I was like, what if I come up with like my funniest joke ever before the day before?
Right. Right, right.
And I had a friend who had done it, and he was like, what are you doing? I keep running to him at Mike's, and I was like, look, I'm going to put this new joke. And he's like, when did you write that joke? And I was like, yesterday. And he'd be like, are you insane? This is your best of the best. And I was like, yeah, I am the best possible writer today.
Mm.
So maybe the best joke is going to come. And I actually put in, I think, two jokes that weren't even in my submission tape.
Oh, wait, did they know you were going to do them? Or you just did?
Yeah.
Oh, you just showed up the day of and were like, I'm going to try these? Or how did that go?
No, day off. So after I got the green light, I coincided with Jessica at a show in Los Angeles.
Jessica's the booker, by the way, for anyone listening.
Right.
Yeah.
So I just sandwiched the jokes in the set. And at the end of the thing, she came and she was like, really good job. You're going to do great. No. And that was all the feedback I got about myself.
Oh, that's great. Okay. I guess if they didn't have any big edits, I mean, that's a good sign, because I've heard the opposite where they're like, these four are great, but you got to take out these three, you know, type deal. So,
right. Yeah. I had also heard that. So the moment that I get the green light, I try to start communicating with them immediately. And I would say, I thought I had like a red pen ready. And I was like, tell me what you're going to cross. And then I'll work around that.
Right.
That's fine. I got booked. I want to get it over with. so I'll work with you guys. But I had all the support. I think they trusted me, and they just told me, good job. Go and do it out there.
Great.
Yeah.
So when – I'm trying to think, how many times do you think you ran that set before you performed it on TV?
I can tell you – I ran it until I was bored.
Okay.
Of running it.
Ran until he was bored.
Let's say 6 weeks. 6 weeks at an average of 15 times. Probably 90 times.
90 times. Okay.
90 times. And it was, I mean, I don't know. I also know that friends of mine who have done, Jimmy Fallon, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was also talking to them. My manager called me on a Friday, and he said, what do you have else for Monday? He didn't tell me for what. And then I didn't hear anything on Monday. And then I found out that I was this close from being called to do Fallon on a Monday, and that Monday. So I would have had no sets of preparation.
Ooh.
If that had been the case.
Right.
So I feel like – and I've seen friends of mine who have done it on that – but it's also said that you've been doing for years and years and years, so you sort of know it. I think the reason I prepared so much is because you never wanna show up and fuck up and know that it's because you just chose not to, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you're booked for that, you can get all the bookings you could ever get to do a bar show, to do a city show. So then why not take advantage?
Yes. So I think that's answering Trevor's second question was like choosing the jokes. It was stuff that was personal, but also clean as well. But you even talking about trying new stuff. Ramiro kind of chimed in here and asking, did you hate any of the jokes? And is that why you were trying to put in new jokes into Colbert's set?
No, I liked... maybe the jokes that I took out were jokes that I wrote like in my second year, and I had just told them enough that I felt the writing on the new ones was stronger. So then I just decided to include those.
Nice. Very nice. Yeah, and that is interesting. You mentioned having management and 6.5 years in. You know, I'm still doing everything independently, but. This Trevor actually just chimed in with this as well, but like how far into comedy and where did you get management and how has it been vital to your success?
So I got management last year, 2019, okay. When I went to Laughing Skull.
Oh, you did the Laughing Skull Fest last year.
Yes.
Cool.
So I, as I said, I did it 3 years before and I just went and I was like, AIDS, cancer, blah. It was like, okay, great. and then I came back when I had my voice was like a little more refined.
Right, smart.
And I did my set, and it was one of those like little movie moments when I'm in the green room with my comedian friends, and one of the late night bookers just beelines to me, and he sits down. Let's start working on your tape. You're gonna be on. Like we want to have you in the show. And then my friends just give me a look of like, oh shit. And then I go to the after party and my manager now approached me and he was like, hey, I really enjoy your set. We had like a very friendly, non-committal conversation. And then he was like, I'm going to call you in a couple of weeks if that's okay. He called me in a couple of weeks and he told me the company he worked for is 3 Arts, is a really good company.
Yeah.
He said, I didn't know. I was like, sure. And I told people, hey, I'm working with this guy from 3 Arts. And they were like, you don't know? And I was like, they were like, have you never watched the end of a special where they show who made the special? And I was like, why? It's finished. I was in it for the jokes, not for the... for the industry stuff. And then he told me, I'm very happy to start working with you. And I just thought, when am I going to get the paperwork? Is this guy really, like, is he not my manager now? And it's like, it turns out that many of the big companies don't make you sign anything.
Yeah.
So I've been working. So Life in School is very instrumental. Going back to the point of, like, maybe it's really good to just figure out where you can be seen and just go try. I'd say that there's a couple, like, really good festivals, like Limestone, Laughing Skull. The West Side Comedy Showdown has, because it's in LA, so it is good industry people coming to check it out, like agents, managers. Try to get out places and get seen, I would say. Now, as far as working with the manager has been a blessing, I think. I already started the late night thing on my own, just by being lucky that I get seen by industry in random places. Besides that, when you have a manager, it's like, ever since I have my manager, he gave me an idea to start writing a TV show, a sitcom, because I was working at the DEA before I did comedy. So I'm writing a sitcom about that. Cool. And it's just like, I think once you get management, they don't change everything for you. Like bookings, you need a booking agent, right? You need like an agency that's like, okay, there's an agent for acting, there's an agent for touring, and there's an agent for literary. What my manager advised me to do is, let's take it easy, because after I did Colbert, one good thing about Colbert is that people from William Morris Endeavor saw me.
And that's, and they were like, agency, we want to talk. Right? William Morris?
Right, yeah. LBME. Yeah. Uh-huh. And then I also did stand-up NBC last year, and some people from CAA saw me, and they're like, we want to talk. So then as of now, I don't have an agent.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think we're trying to choose someone that has the best rapport and has offered the best opportunities. But then again, they're not going to be like, oh, I'm your agent now, go be a headliner. Because they have headliners who have a lot of followers, a lot of tickets. They can, like, you can be a YouTube celebrity and just go, or like a TikTok celebrity and just go and talk about your TikTok. And if you sell out, you will be on tour.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in terms of like a stand-up, it doesn't transform anything. It doesn't make you a headliner. I also haven't tried, because I still have a day job, I haven't gone crazy and like message the whole world to see how many bookings I can get as a feature or whatever. In terms of like showing you that the possibilities are endless, it's good to have a manager. Because like now that I'm working with managers, like I'm right now, like the day I finished taping Colbert, the day after I was working on a pilot for a sitcom.
Wow. And that's through the guidance of your manager. Like he put the idea in your head. Yeah, I interviewed Tamara Goins, who is the head of comedy at Innovative Artists out in LA. So she's worked with a lot, and she was able to break down the difference between like management and having an agent. And she said an agent is more transactional, where it's like, here's work, let me take my cut. But management is more like you're saying, it's more like a mentorship, more like a guidance, more like helping your career along. But her advice was, before you have a manager, have something to manage. You know, a lot of times people, comics, just feel like they're going to get that manager, and then that's where their success is going to come. It's kind of like, no, first have something to bring to the table that they can then help mold into like a bigger idea. But a lot of times people want management without even having anything to manage, you know?
Yeah, of course. So for example, one good example about that is Just for Laughs, and how they only audition The real auditions are only if you have a manager, right? For repped.
Right.
Sure. And then I've seen many, many cases where people get repped super early. And a few cases where people who've been doing comedy for 4 years or something, they go to JFL. And at JFL, you're performing for like 1,000 industry members. And they go, besides this 5 minutes, what do you have? And then you go, another minute. And they go, okay, bye. So then I never, like, whenever I was like, oh, I'm 6 years into comedy, 5.5 years into comedy, and I'm not repped. If only I were repped, my life would be so different. But it's like, no, I'd rather go maybe this year or next year when I have a freaking show to give you. Hey, who wants this show? Because it's a great show. And then also some people are just like, if only I had a late night TV credit. Guess what? It doesn't pay you $100,000. You get a lot of friends being like, good job. And it's good. And it's a proof of your merits. But you got to think bigger than that, I think.
Yeah, it's super important. It's just, I think, like you said at the beginning, man, it really is just like, let your work speak for itself. That's really where your opportunities are going to be. It's not this one experience that just changes everything. It's a gradual process over time. And just like developing a joke, it's gradual over time. So just letting your work speak for yourself, having those tangible things, because now it is more important than ever. Like, comedians do have more than one thing. It's like, okay, you're funny on stage. Oh, yeah. What else? Can you act? Do you have a podcast? Do you have a pilot? It's like, what else do you have besides being funny on stage?
Of course.
And this does tie into really two questions in one. First off, Trent says, three arts, congrats, because that is a big deal. I mean, it's at the end of every special. It's at the end of Louis' show. Like, three arts is known as, like, the gold standard when it comes to comedy. So definitely congrats on that.
Thank you.
And this is kind of a combination, but Trent asks, is this the next step of your career, a comedy special? Like, do you have 40 plus minutes of material? And that does parlay into Ramiro also asked, like, what is your goal now after Colbert? You have a full-time job. Are you wanting to quit the job and do stand-up full-time? So it's kind of a two-parter. Like, what's next for you?
I think that's a really good question. I was on the verge of quitting my day job to just, like, move in with my girlfriend and just, like, hit up everybody, go perfect my featured set, to, like, learn to do, like, a solid 30 minutes. And just try to put it somewhere where people see it, and where like the, I think Netflix right now would be the only streaming service that is like worth putting your special on. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything, right? But I've listened. I mean, how many people that you have interviewed have told you that nobody saw their Comedy Central?
Oh,
half hour.
Like, all of them.
Right. So, like, you ask anybody who's done one and they go, like, I don't know that it's worth it, right? Mm-hmm. So people who are doing the stuff that you're doing, you're building your audience by putting your thing out there. Right. Sam Morrell, I don't know who he did it with, but he just put something out, a million views, right? Get as many YouTube subscribers as you can, like the Andrew Schultz model.
Yep.
So for me, it's like, I don't know that I'm wise, like social media wise like that with them. I would love to keep growing my act to make money on the road as far as stand up, and to get that special perfected to maybe if be able to sell it to like HBO or Netflix. And the sitcom is just like, because I found it like an entertaining, something that I'm passionate about. I read some scripts and I just found them amazing. And I was like, I would love to learn to do that now. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm doing now. Just like I have this, out of this this is 100 pages, and 98 are just nothing. And two of them are like a few jokes. I have about 10 scripts that I've written that are like just really terrible. But then the next one is going to be good. Why? Because how awesome would it be if I had a daytime job writing television here in New York,
yeah,
and maybe do stand up at night? You know?
Yeah, that's very comforting. Like 98 pages out of 100 are just nothing, but you've written 10 scripts is also incredible. So it's like you're working that writing muscle, and the more you write, the more opportunities you're giving yourself to find that next great script or that next great joke.
Right. And I think that I just thought about this, but when you're a kid and you start playing Super Mario or whatever, the highest level of difficulty is horrible. And if you, for a beginner, and if you thought, then why would I even try if this is going to take me 1,000 hours to finish? But you're a kid and you have all the time in your hands, and you see it as play, as a thing that brings you joy. So you let yourself make mistakes. So like I think that's the only thing that prevents me from having a writer's block, which I've never had, is to be like, yeah, this is probably really awful.
Oh,
but what? But it made me laugh. So who cares?
Oh yeah, I like your. That's been really helpful, is just taking away the pressure and expectation of creating something funny. It's almost just the act of writing is more important than the result.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, I like that quote. The act of writing is more important than the result.
Great quote, Joel.
Oh, that's a Joelism right there. I'm acting like I came up with it. I was like, you pretty much just guided me into thinking that. But that really does... I think that's super helpful for everyone to hear. Is it really? Yeah, just lower the bar. It's a law of averages. Just show up and write.
Right.
And
right.
What is, like, we hinted at it, but like going full time for you, like what it, you thought about quitting your job and moving in with your girlfriend, but then you didn't. Mm-hmm. Like that's a big question a lot of comics have.
I didn't because of the apocalypses that's happening.
Oh, okay.
So I'm like lucky that I have my day job because I'm still working from home, getting paid. So
I just love like this moment in the world and society of just how nonchalantly you just said that. It's like, so what prevented you from going full time? Well, I was going to, but then this apocalypse happened. So we're just going to ride this out and see if the world ends or not. It's like, so I'll just keep getting paid to work from home instead of not getting paid to write another script.
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah. Okay.
So you're saying, but I'm sorry, I completely forgot what you were asking.
Oh, I was just following up on, you had the idea, which a lot of comics do, of, okay, it's now time to go full-time comedy. And I was wondering what prevented you from taking that leap.
Right. So when I'm going to get back on track with that once we come back to when I can go on the road. I do a few clubs on the road, so then that could bring me a little bit of income. And the factor that made me think now is the time is the fact that I have representation and they go, hey, look, there's all these doors that are open if you bring the material. Mm-hmm. So I feel like every day that I, because I'm already writing 80 minutes a day, right? But these days that I've been having off, I've been writing like, I'm not writing stand-up because like I'm not training with anybody. So I'll just begin when we can do stand-up again. But I've been writing at least 2 hours in the morning and 2 hours at night.
Oh, my God.
So I'm doing like 4 hours of like script writing because it's different. It's less complicated than stand-up. It's more like you start writing some stupid dialogue between two people in your head and it's just like time goes by. So I figured, okay, I have the opportunity. I just need the time to like grind for a year. If I stay in my day job, it's going to take me, and I work 1 hour a day in a script, it's going to take me 5 years to get good at it. But with the amount of work that I put in a day, and I don't have a day job, it's going to take me 9 months, right? So my idea for quitting a day job is, look, there's somebody waiting for a really good writing sample so that I could get staffed on a TV show, or maybe the idea of selling my own TV show. So why not do that Monday through Thursday, work like a mule when it comes to that, and then Sunday through Thursday through Sunday, go feature somewhere and get better at stand-up. And that, so there's no reason for me to keep a day job. Even though I'm not making the money, I'm willing to make the sacrifice of having a way low income because I'm building towards something.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you have something you're working towards, which is super helpful. Which also helped me when I filmed my special last year, was having that to work towards really motivated me to, like, okay, even when you don't feel like it, show up to work anyway. But if show up to the page, get on stage, things like that. And you're talking about lowering the bar is helpful. But, like, mm-hmm. 4 hours, dude, like, what are you doing on the days you don't feel like writing? How are you convincing or tricking yourself into doing it anyway?
I mean, so the good thing about the day job is, like, I only have that window.
Right.
And if I only have, like, from 8 to, like, 9, from, like, 7 to 8:20. So if it's for, like, a person who loves exercise, you didn't work out that day, they just feel guilty. Right. So then I feel bad the whole day. So for me, it's not it's for my own mental health that I do it, because otherwise I'm going to beat myself up over not doing that. And now on the weekends, it's like, okay, I wake up and I get a little cup of coffee and I watch The Simpsons, and then I sit down and I have I have an outline of, okay, I'm going to write a script about this stupid episode where I think that in my sitcom, there is a guy who is working for the cartel, but he doesn't want to kill people. So they told him, okay, you have to go interrogate this person, but he doesn't want to torture them. So then he goes to a class and he learns hypnosis, and he comes back and tries to, like, interrogate somebody using hypnosis. And then somebody hypnotizes him, and blah, 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 and some dumb shit happens, and it's the end, right? I have an outline. So once you have something that you're going to, like, you have 20 scenes and you spend 10 minutes per scene, that adds up to, like, 200 minutes. That's, like, your day goes by like that. So having the outline, having the plan for a sitcom, it makes it easy to sit down and write. Mm-hmm. Now, how do I trick myself into writing? I think I just structure my day. Wake up, watch The Simpsons. That's already a pleasurable activity, right? Then I sit down and I write for an hour. And then I take a break and I have, like, some Nutella with something, right? I'm rewarding myself again. And then I write down for another hour. And then I go and ride my bicycle for an hour, and then I come back and I write for another hour, and then I take a nap, and then for my nap is like it's a different day. My brain is not fried, and then I write a little more. It's just like, it's creating a discipline until it becomes a non-issue that you don't even think about.
Yeah, that's powerful. I think, yeah, doing it piece by piece, but also having that structure and a reason to write, I think, helps people. Whatever you create in your head, whatever that reason is, that can become, like, your motivator on days when you're like, I'll get to it later or whatnot. But I feel the same way. I have to write in the morning. Otherwise, I'm just going to, like, beat myself up over it for the rest of the day.
Right.
Which a lot of us do. So this, let's go ahead and land this plane here. Real quick, I have two more questions. Z asked, why did you decide to go writing rather than acting? Most comedians lean into acting.
I suggest you watch a clip of my stand-up to, like, see my range of emotion. good answer.
But, dude, that set was killer.
Thank you. No, but to give you, like, a more extensive answer is, I'm also taking acting classes.
Okay.
So I'm just I'm doing everything because I think everyone will tell you something different, right? Like, what's his name? Neighbor Gatsby says, spend 15 years getting amazing in stand-up, and then somebody was going to come and give you a sitcom. That's one way of doing it. Another way of doing it is, like, get good at everything gradually so that when – it's, like, something that I would tell myself if I could go back 4 years. I'd be like, okay, dude, you're not booked on Saturday and you're not booked on Sunday. Go to read a book about how to write a TV script. Take a class in TV writing. Mm-hmm. Take an acting class. So, like, at least one day a week, work on something different. If you like sketches, one day a week, just write a sketch and shoot a sketch on Sunday. Whatever draws your attention is, like, nurture different sides. Or like, have a podcast. Do one little thing that, like, adds to your repertoire.
Yes.
So that when you get attention for your stand-up, you have an even bigger draw. And be like, yeah, I can act. Go audition and get a sitcom. Work on some shitty sitcom that you don't even like, but who cares? Money. And it brings you an audience. Now, next thing you know, you can tour off your role that you hate on your TV.
Gosh, I love that. It's just having more than stand-up. And it sounds like, I mean, comedy isn't your full-time job, but you're already treating it like it is, which I think is important for any comedian wanting to go full-time. Start treating it like a job now. What are you waiting for? Even if you have a day job, you show up and give that employer all your all, and you treat their business like a job. Treat your business of stand-up like a job as well.
Right, right.
So yeah, it's all making sense for people listening. Only 6 years, 6.5 years in a comedy, already been on Colbert. There's a reason behind this opportunity you got, and it's because you're putting in the necessary work for these things to happen. So a lot of comedians want that magic bullet, but I think what we've learned today is the work is the magic bullet.
You're right.
So this is the final one here, and this is from Trent Babb. He's out on the West Coast, actually. He tunes into the Right 10 Clubs every morning, too. So this is a guy putting in the work because he's up at 7 a.m. It's 10 a.m. here in Atlanta, so 7 a.m. his time to join the Right 10 Clubs. So he's
good job.
Yeah, Trent's killing it. So he had, like, two questions. I think we can kind of parlay into one here, but let's do this one first. He's are you leaning more towards clean material because it opens doors for you, or do you still tell dirty jokes at clubs?
The moment that I was done with Colbert, I think my brain was like, okay, now next one I'm gonna sell to whoever I want to sell. I don't want to do 15 late nights because why? Nobody's giving you sitcoms from doing a late night. So then I'm allowing myself to be like, okay, let me make these jokes that I have this. When last time I saw my grandma, she tried to sell me a blanket. Like, she gave me a blanket and then she put a price on the blanket. And that was the last time that I spoke to my grandma when she was alive. So I'm trying to like make a joke about how I should, because she wanted to give me a blanket in installments. and so the joke that I haven't figured out is, like, I should have taken it because I wouldn't have had to pay for the fucking blanket and it would be a free blanket. That joke is never going to be on late night TV. Mm-hmm. But that's something about my life that I think it's weird and I want to talk about it. And now I don't have the restriction of, but see, the thing is that I've never worried about clean or dirty, because I've never written for them. I think I write for me. I think one mistake that people make is because crass jokes and so-called edgy jokes is just people that make people groan and get a reaction from people. That's easier. So I think never use that as a crutch to be like, to just go and write that, right? How many, just every time that I watch a set and it's a dick joke or like something very, like it's really quick sexual and reference, I just go, all right, anyone is doing those.
Mm-hmm.
So write what you want, but just don't write for a reaction. write for because it makes you laugh and it's funny.
Yeah, I think that's super important. Is the big debate of clean versus dirty is it's all personal preference at the end of the day. And like you talked about, when you write, it's your, these are things like once you were asked about what did you decide to keep and things like that. It's really like what strikes you as funny. So if what's funny is clean to you, then by all means be clean. You know, I consider myself a clean comedian, but that's only because it's what organically, that's where my sense of humor organically goes, you know. And if I'm at an open mic or sometimes at a club, I mean, I'll swear every now and then. It's not like all or nothing, but it is my personal sense of humor skews towards clean and flipping things into the clean perspective. But that's me personally. I never tell a comic, hey, you don't do that or you should be like this. It's more like, what is your sense of humor? And just listen to it. Yeah. Because there's enough doors and opportunities for everyone now. And what people are looking for more than ever now is authenticity and what is true to you. Because comedy's booming, and how you're going to stand out is by creating comedy that's uniquely you. And no one else.
Right.
Whether it's dirty, clean, what's going to stand out is that authenticity. Because people now more than ever can sniff out when you're putting on an act to get a certain, like, I better be clean because I'll get XYZ. People are going to see through, like, the fake, you know.
Yeah.
But that is, that does tie in to, and Trent says thank you as well, but this ties into the final question as well, as we're talking about you. And this has become one of my favorite topics of discussion as I've been talking about writing more and more on here. Is Trent asked, do you ever feel trapped writing just about you? Do the crowds laugh from you material more than your other bits? So I guess if material's more about you, do they laugh more? And do you feel trapped by that?
I feel trapped. I don't feel trapped. The only thing that I don't like is, like, sometimes when I tell my girlfriend a story or, like, a friend, and they're like, that's so funny. Go, whatever you just told me, go and say that on stage. And I go, and then people just look at me like, so what? Because I don't know, so, like, you know how you laugh when I was like, because of the apocalypse that happened, and then you laugh.
Right.
I think that when I deliver something like organically as a story, it comes up very organically. But then when I go try to say in a session, it's like, hey, so you guys think this is funny? And then it just doesn't work. So then jokes work for me. I mean, we talked about Colbert being very personal, but that just happened. Right. I also have jokes about things that I observed. But then also, when you observe something, the most relatable way of presenting that is to make up a little story where you're part of it.
Boom.
You know what I mean? Like, I had this joke where on my Colbert set about somebody telling me to go back to my country. Right? Mm-hmm. And that happened. I made it in a convey in one of those electrical the walkways for simplicity, because I was on an airplane and there were other Latin passengers getting out of the airplane to transfer to our airplanes. And there was a Peruvian lady ahead of me, and she was trying to get out ahead of an American person as the pilot had instructed. And the American guy got mad. He turned around and he said, go back to your country, as he was blocking her from taking a plane to go back to her country.
Huh.
So I was like, this is so funny. But why would I go and be like, so I was trying to transfer planes and there was an old lady and da-da-da. So I was just like, no, I'm going to take the place of the old lady.
Dude, that is so fascinating. So how the story actually happened was you second-handedly saw this guy tell a lady to go back to her country. But for the sake of the joke, you just made yourself the old lady.
Right.
Wow. So,
and because people are not, because I think it's, speaking about the difference between personal comedy and observation, when I see a set and the person talks for 5 minutes about the documentaries that they've been watching on their couch, I just go like, I don't know that I want to hear. I mean, you would have to be Richard Pryor for me to listen to what you think is stupid on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But there is always a way to personalize comedy so that is more digestible to people. Like, I read this article in the New York Times about a woman who was talking about the problems of dating while being on a wheelchair. And she was Catholic. And she said that she prayed every night and she asked God to help her find love. And I thought of the Bible and I was like, in the Bible, if you can't walk, you ask Jesus to like heal you. Right? But I can't just go and be like, so I was reading this article about this stupid bitch in a wheelchair.
Right.
Who's praying about, how dumb are you? It was like, no, like you can't say that. Right. So then on the, I wrote a joke about, I remember that I used to live in Philly and the Pope went to Philly. So I just made the lady in the wheelchair a male. So as not to like be judgmental about her vulnerabilities mm-hmm. on dating. And I took him to the parade to wave at the Pope, and then he waved at the Pope, and then he turns to me and he says, I wish I could speak to the Pope face to face. So I could ask him to pray that I find love. And then I just said the same thing that I thought with the lady. I was like, that's not how it works. First Jesus cures the leper, and then the leper finds a girlfriend on his own. Right? And that was how the version that I made, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like me filtered.
Yes. You almost filter the material through Pedro. And that's how you personalize it. So you may see something, but then you just make it about you, even if it wasn't. Right. And then that's how you're able to personalize material.
I think so. And I just think that it's not like a conscious thing, but like the more you write comedy, the more you realize that. I mean, just look at the specials of like really good, like look at Sam Morrell or look at Normand. Look at Michelle Wolf. As a comedian, just sometimes look back and when they're like, my friend told me this. And it's like, that friend doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
You're presenting like a philosophical, like a little logical argument. And you're putting the person that you want to bring down, the opinion that you want to break down, you make it a human. Because the interaction between two people is what creates the like, oh, embarrassed. Oh, that's funny. Otherwise, you'd be giving TED Talks if you were like, I'm going to dispute the fact that
right.
that I don't agree with this Trump supporter.
And I love that the more you write, it's almost, I mean, you know, writing is like a muscle too. And it's like the more you write, the more aware you'll start to become of comedy in your life because you're getting better at it. It's getting stronger. Your sense of humor is getting more and more in-tuned. So I think it is just the more you create, the more you write around comedy, just the more you'll start to see it and the more you'll be able to start filtering it through you and onto a personal set on stage.
Right. Yeah. And then at the on the other spectrum, there's some really brilliant comedians who don't, like you would say, okay, Andrew Schultz is observational because he has this bit about, okay, women say this is the worst patriarchy. And then he goes on this thing about like, well, some women in Africa have their clitoris cut up. And then he just makes a case, put in the worst case scenario and just telling people in the United States how they have it great. And then women are laughing at the fact that he's saying that we have the best patriarchy, blah, 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 blah. He's not in the joke at all. Mm-hmm. But you know what is? His point of view.
Ooh.
And he's super strong.
Oh, man. That's a great point. Because I was looking for it. I was like, yeah, how does he personalize it? He personalizes it with his point of view. That you said, right. Sometimes, you said, strong point of view that he believes in, so then the audience will in turn trust and believe in it also.
Right.
Woo! Oh my gosh. Yo, Trevor just said, this has been awesome, very insightful. Thank you, Joel and Pedro. This, Trent says, thank you. This, I'm telling you, kids, holy cow, this has been a whirlwind and hopefully the first of just many questions people reach out to you about. You know, like this show, like, you know, when we connect on social media, like, it's for comics by comics, and you've shared so much, way more than anticipated. We had way more questions than anticipated, so hopefully, you know, we'll be able to be doing more of these. Trent says, fantastic. Alex says, thank you as well. So thank you, everyone, for tuning into this. Thank you, Pedro, for being willing to do this and share so much insight.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Z says, amazing. Thanks, Pedro. I'll keep an eye for shows in Toronto. So
thank you.
Yeah, that's great. And Don says, great stuff. Thanks, Joel and Pedro. Oh, man. Dude, hey, we're changing lives out here, Pedro. Please let them know where they can connect with you, where they can support you. Like, please let them know.
Sure. Just follow me on Instagram if you like. It's Pedro's Jokes. So my name, the letter S, and the word jokes.
Perfect. All right. And your website as well.
It's PedroGonzalezComedy.com.
PedroGonzalezComedy.com. And Z says, we have healthcare, so the apocalypse should end here first. Start booking your Canadian tours, guys.
Good idea.
Yeah, that's what's great about the Hot Breathiverse, man. We're all over the world. So it's cool that we can actually start to come together in moments like this and really interact and learn from each other in a real and, like, intimate way. So I'm looking forward to more of these. Thank you all for this idea. I mean, this came up in the Right 10 Club on regular Facebook Live. People were like, hey, we'd like to ask questions to people who have been on TV. And I was, boom, I know a guy. We just connected on social media, Pedro Gonzalez. So please, Hot Breathiverse, reach out to Pedro if you have any other questions, or just reach out just to say thank you and for him sharing his valuable time with us here today. And keep supporting Hot Breath. By the best way to do it is by just sharing it with other comedians on social media in your favorite comedy Facebook groups. You can support the show with our Patreon if you go to patreon.com/hotbreathpod. If you want to add a little bit to our Patreon tip jar there. But overall, just keep sharing this, keep connecting in these times. I hope you're staying safe out there and staying smart out there. And join this Facebook group if you're not a member. We have a very special announcement that we will do right now that we teased earlier in the Right 10 Club. But tomorrow, as of 2 p.m. tomorrow, 2 p.m. Eastern time, we're having Sean Patton come on the show. So
Whoa. If
you guys haven't heard his episode on Hot Breath, it's episode 184. But he has one of our most, like, highly complimented and highly educational episodes about writing and storytelling. So he's going to be on here tomorrow at 2 p.m. So definitely tell your other comedian friends and family that that's going to be back here. He'll be back here tomorrow with us live. But Pedro, you started something here, buddy. You started something. I'm so glad that this new series, Hot Breath Live, started with you. And I wish you all the luck and continued success. And the work, your work ethic, man, has just, it's really inspiring. And I think my big takeaways from this are, one, just show up and do the work, you know, writing 100 pages and 98 are terrible, but those two pages are the gold, you know, and just showing up, lowering the bar, not having any expectations beyond just starting. That's my big takeaway from this. Just start. Take away all expectations. Just allow yourself to just show up and create without any expectation.
Right. Cause you don't ever have a map for, like, imagine, did you know that your podcast was going to turn into this? This is great. You've interviewed such great comedians, and you're, like, giving so much information on how to become a better comedian to a lot of people, and you didn't know at the start that it was going to get so good.
No, it just started.
So congrats for that.
I'm inspired
by you also.
Wow. Thank you, Pedro, man. Well, I'm excited to do more things together. This has been great. And
absolutely.
Hot kids out there, the group is called Hot Breath Comedy Network. It'll be linked in the show notes. But Pedro Gonzalez, thanks for being on Hot Breath, my man.
Thank you.
And we will see everyone else next Monday right here on Hot Breath. All right, kids. Keep grinding out there. Stay safe and smart. And we love you. Bye. Hot Breath. This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.